Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Nicolet Wealth Management Podcast. With me, I have Mike Steppy, and we get lots of things to jump into today. Mike, it's been an interesting, kind of nice couple of weeks in the markets and CPI. What's going on?
Consumer Price Index came out, and I think it was one of those things that confirmed people's perception. So everybody went, yeah. The index was unchanged in October. Up 3.2% over the past 12 months and sort of confirm the perception that inflationary pressures are coming down. The core CPI components, that excludes food and energy, was up 0.2 in October, so not bad, up 4% over the past 12 months. The reports were about a tenth of a percent less than what people were expecting. So they weren't like, wow, different, but they were, you know, it was a positive. We're seeing inflationary pressures come down. Gas prices have really come down. The energy index is 4.5% lower over the past 12 months. And shelter is the one thing that continues. Shelter and wages continue to be the thing that has sort of pushed those prices up. But in general, a favorable reading. It confirmed what the market was looking for. So a good reaction to it.
Mike, that's a great point. Adam, I'm going to come to you with a question about S&P and what's been driving the recent rally.
Yeah, recently, you've seen the S&P 500 jump 10% in about 2 weeks. I think it's a couple of things. You had that positive inflation report, as well as a labor report that showed wage growth was slowing down. Also, the participation rate was slowing down, you know, all of which are important ingredients for the soft landing. The idea is that the Fed rate hiking cycle might be over. That means that rates have likely peaked. You did see the 10-year Treasury go down from 5 to less than 4.5. And now there are expectations that rates are going to get cut in 2024. That's a lot of tailwinds for the equity market. So like we said, the market's up 10. The best performing is tech. So tech has benefited. Tech stocks are up 14%. Then you had consumer discretionary spending. Those stocks were up 12. Financials were kind of even. Regional banks did well, up 15. And then on the other side, more defensive sectors like staples, healthcare were only up 4 or 5. And then energy, somewhat surprisingly, was down 10. And that was really because oil was down 15. And actually, oil's now in a bear market, down over 20% since September, as you've seen a lot of supply hit and inventory is building, so putting pressure on that part of the market. So it's really the idea of a soft landing and kind of a risk-on environment.
I appreciate that perspective. When you think about how these inflation readings, unemployment, and that affects the outlook for markets, if we push that forward over the next 12 months, what do you see?
I think we're going to continue to see a really volatile market here. And we're at this point where things are changing. And so you've got all these institutional investors that are sort of lurching back and forth. So I think the volatility will be high. What we saw recently was there were, I would say, four things that sort of, it was the series of these four things that sort of got this latest market reaction. It was a slightly slower pace of coupon auctions. Then Fed officials sounding a little less hawkish. The downshift in the jobs report this month, where we saw a lower level of new jobs being created. And then the CPI sort of topped that off. And so you got this in terms of 10-year treasuries, as an example, they went down 56 basis points. So we were just about at 5% a month ago. And now this morning we're at 4.44. So you see a noticeable move when we used to go whole quarters where we didn't move by like 10 basis points. Now we're getting in a month a 56 basis point move. So we're getting these volatile shifts that are going on. And I think that's going to continue over the next 12 months.
That's exciting stuff in the bond world. It's not normal in my experience when we see weaker employment numbers, I think you said unemployment or jobs not as strong as anticipated, that we see markets and the economy respond favorably. What leads to that?
How people are seeing it through the prism of the Fed. So they're looking at it and if the jobs market was really strong, the Fed would feel the need to push overnight rates up another 0.25%, maybe more. And so when they see less pressure on that, then it's a positive in terms of rates are, you may not like where rates are because they're high, but the perception is people can deal with this level of rates. We just don't want to see them much higher than this. So I think that's sort of, it's sort of a relief. Okay, it's not going to be worse than this.
Sure. Well, I think there's a half the world might say that. There's another part of our depositors and people who own bonds that are saying, hey, I wouldn't mind some higher rates, right? So take that conversation.
There's winners and losers in this, okay?
Yes.
When you think back, you know, when the Fed was pulling rates down, the borrowers were cheering that and the savers were going, oh, man. And now it's just the reverse of that. The savers are saying, yes, finally. And the borrowers are going, oh, they can't be serious. Not more, not higher. Oh, man. Yeah.
Well, how does that look to you going forward? Obviously, we see a little retreat in rates now. Is it something, and maybe tie this one into federal debt and credit quality as we think of the U.S. in a general sense. There's the side where people will say it's going to be pretty tough to service the debt if rates are up at 5-6%, that the Fed will need to, Treasury will need lower rates. Or is there some side of that where you see rates have a potential to be higher into the future?
I think it goes back to where inflation is. If we bring down inflation, then if you can get that around 2% or maybe 2.5%, I think there's some structural factors that are going to keep it more like 2.5 than 2. But if you can get inflation at that level, then you can look and you can say bonds could yield 3-3.5%. And when you start at where we're today at 4.5, that means rates can come down a couple of percent. So I think that can happen. The question is, can we get inflation down and sort of keep it there? When you look back historically, inflation tends to come in waves. So you have the first wave, you sort of say, hey, okay, that we've beaten that. And then another wave comes and you go, oh, okay. So I think that's the challenge in here is, can we keep it down? And I think we can, but that's still an open question.
That's a great perspective on it. I'm going to bring us over to alternatives in energy. It's been a different year in 23 than it was in 22. Can you talk a little bit about why alternatives like wind and solar have struggled in 23 and what you see going forward?
It's a situation where the same thing we've been talking about up to this point is impacting them. Higher rates. Most people were looking at it and analyzing it as an energy alternative. And what they weren't seeing as they looked at this was, what do those balance sheets look like? And as you build out a solar farm or you build out these things, what you had was a lot of debt, some equity, but a lot of debt. And when interest rates go on a treasury note from less than 1% to almost 5%, that impacts their ability, you know, well, their cost of servicing their debt. And so that became the challenge for them. So that cut into their profitability and their stock prices reflect that. So you saw that go down fairly dramatically this year after having had some pretty good years. So when rates were low, they benefited from that. Again, it's this, there are winners and losers when rates change, and they've been one of the losers to this point. Now, as you look forward, which I think was your question, you get a situation where that both wind and solar are used to government subsidies. And that has a bigger impact than the straight economics of their business. And so we'll sort of see what those subsidies are and how they change over time. And I think that's going to determine how attractive those energy sources are. So I don't have a great answer for you on that, because it's not so much economics as it is government policy there.
That's a great, I think that's a pretty good answer. When you talk, I'm going to shift that to high yield. A lot of the, or disproportionate amount of the high yield bond index relative to, say, the investment grade bond index is associated with energy. Are you seeing any issues related to credit quality in the high yield index?
The high yield, well, you're always going to have issues in the high yield index because these are companies that are more highly leveraged. So you're always going to have a level of concern there that is going to be higher than if you're looking at a pool of investment grade credits. Now, in the energy world, we're talking about, you go back a month ago, the price of oil was $90 a barrel. Now we're looking at it, we're seeing it at $74 a barrel. So that part has become less profitable for those in the energy business, but it's still at most people are break even point is at a substantially lower level than 74. So in general, this is a pretty favorable time period. Most energy-related companies can make money at these sort of price points. And many of them are leveraged, so the impact of higher interest rates have hurt their business, but it's still, they're making money. And that's the key component to this.
I have one more question for you that will tie in before some parting thoughts related to real estate and interest rates. Obviously, lots of sectors are affected by changes in interest rates. Do you see any more optimism in real estate if these rates get lower or stay a little lower than they were?
Absolutely. They are sensitive to it. It's a leveraged business. And so a big component of how profitable they are is what they're paying on their debt. So yes, a 1% decrease in interest rates helps the real estate business substantially. I think almost anybody would agree with that thought. So yes.
And it'll be interesting to see how it affects housing affordability. Presumably it would push houses up, but obviously the payment could go down for some and could make the multifamily space pretty interesting as well.
And especially because you continue to see multifamily housing starts continue to ramp up, especially in the Midwest. So you look at Madison and they're a lot of new developments there. And you look across the state and you're seeing new developments coming online. So there's going to be a supply level that's going to be sort of, I think, breathtaking as to how much comes on over the course of the next year.
These are exciting times ahead. Well, it's I always learn something from you from getting to do the podcast with you, Mike. I'll turn it to you for some parting thoughts or any topics you want to dig into.
I think what we've seen in terms of interest rates is a shift lower. And at the same time, the curve has become a little more inverted. And because long rates have come down, if we look at it as an example, 10-year treasuries have come down 56 basis points. 2-year treasuries have come down 35-ish. So in that kind of a world, the curve becomes a little more inverted. I think we're going to continue to watch that, and you're going to see the situation is when rates go up, the curve will flatten. When rates come back down, the curve will get a little bit more inverted. So you're still not getting paid a great deal to go out longer than, let's say, 5 to 7 years. So that part of the curve has been relatively flat, and I would expect that that's going to continue. But there's not a great deal of incentive to say, wow, I think I want to go out and buy a 12-year bond. That's just not the case in my world anyway.
Thanks, Mike. That's a great point. Adam, would you come to you for your parting thoughts?
Yeah, thanks. Thanksgiving. The cost of Thanksgiving, luckily or happily, is the cost has moderated from the last couple of years of big increases. I think most items should cost about the same as last year. Some are even less. They say the total average cost of the meal should be about 5% less compared to last year. You know, it's still about 25% higher than it was before COVID. But, I think the big outlier is turkey should definitely be cheaper, about 5 or 10%. It's interesting, the wholesale price, this is what stores pay, is actually down 30%. So I think if you shop around, you might be able to find some deals this year. But I want to highlight the best value seems to be fresh cranberries versus pumpkin pie. Looks a little rich this year. So I take the extra money you save, maybe invite an extra person and have a great Thanksgiving.
Well, I like it. I like following the cases in your world and the advice that you provide. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. As always, reach out if anything's on your mind, and we'll talk to you again soon.